Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
The Cubs are going to win the trade deadline in the NL Central. They're everywhere right now. And they're willing to part with Owen Cassie, one of their top power-hitting outfield prospects, as part of the package. And Jed Hoyer and Carter Hawkins literally are everywhere. I mean, as I talk to people in the industry, they're all in. And they're going to do what it takes to win.
That was our next guest. He was on foul territory and now joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. It is Jim Bowden, the former Major League General Manager. He's an analyst and insider for CBS Sports, The Athletic, MLB Network Radio, SiriusXM. You can find him in a lot of different places, and he is not afraid to share a sports thought. Jim, thank you for joining us on Rahimi and Harris on The Score.
Hey, thanks for having me on your show. I appreciate it.
Jim, we're excited to talk to you about the Cubs. I want to start with some not revisionist history. I just want to see if things are still the same, because one of the things you published in The Athletic a few weeks ago really caught the eye/ire of Cubs fans when you suggested that they should send Cade Horton, Owen Casey, Kevin Alcantara, and shortstop Ronnie Cruz to the Marlins for Sandy Alcantara. Do you stand by that today, or has Alcantara's ups and downs, mostly downs, affected the way you feel about the haul and what should be the return for the Marlins?
Yeah, that's a huge haul. And of course, I was looking at it from the Marlins perspective and going back in history and looking at what the Washington Nationals got for Juan Soto. Certainly that kind of package doesn't work unless you're convinced that Sandy Alcantara is an ace, unless you think he is a Cy Young Award winner that he was a couple of years ago. And if he's that level, then that is probably the return that's going to take. But it would be really steep for the Cubs to do that. Highly unlikely that that's where they end up. That being said, there's no doubt. I'm working on an article for The Athletic that is going up tomorrow morning where I did an anonymous poll of all the GMs and presidents in baseball. And it was very interesting to me because Owen Cassie, the minor league outfielder at AAA who was in the Yu Darvish deal, is a name that just keeps coming up everywhere in the industry, which makes it clear that the Cubs are everywhere trying to get better and trying to add pitching.
And I actually appreciate you mentioning Owen Casey, Jim, because I feel like it touches on something else. I love to talk about like a second generation of a trade, or, you know, a trade tree where one transaction leads to so many others. I know that's a big part of what you do. And when you consider that the only name that gets brought up from that Yu Darvish trade that happened back in December 2020 is Casey, who isn't yet online, and this is 2025 now, it makes you really understand how catastrophic a deal like that can be for a team like the Cubs, who want to be flexible now when their window is right now.
Yeah, no question. I mean, that can be catastrophic. At the same time, making a trade of Javier Baez on his free agent year and getting Pete Crow Armstrong, although it took a few years to get here, and now you have a superstar, it's probably worth it, right? And that's what you get with prospects. Prospects are never a slam dunk. They never live up to the hype. In fact, I've always told people, if you really want to do some history on this, go back and look at MLB Pipeline or Baseball America or The Athletic or any website you want, and look at the top 10 prospects of each organization over the last 20 years. And look how many made it and look how many didn't. And go back in history and look at how many times you didn't want your team to trade a particular prospect or two that ended up absolutely being nothing. And then you probably regret it now that you had that opinion back then. So you got to remember with prospects, yeah, there's some slam dunkers. Yes, there are some that are not high risk. But at the end of the day, most of them are not going to live up to the expectations of the fans.
We're talking with Jim Bowden, national writer for The Athletic, former senior VP and general manager for the Cincinnati Reds and Washington Nationals for over a decade and a half, here on Rahimi and Harris. Back to what you just said, Jim, about the prospects who don't make it. How much, in your experience and in your observation post front office, do you think the level of development matters in trying to assess whether someone's going to pan out, whether you're taking a guy at low or high A versus a guy who is at AAA and is seemingly banging on the door but maybe doesn't have a spot on a major league roster at his current organization? How much does that make a difference in predicting someone's success?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely makes a difference. And I think today, being able to predict success over the last, 2 to 3 years, is much better than it's ever been. I mean, the analytics and the science behind evaluating players is at the best it's ever been, and it is much different than it was 5 to 6 years ago. That being said, the human element is the most important part, and that is something that is not measured by analytics. It's not measured by science, and it's measured by opinion on the people that are evaluating makeup, character, competitiveness, work ethic, what their life is off the field, all of those intangibles. And that plays such a huge part in the development of a player or the regression of a player. And it's the most important part, and you can't measure it, right? So it's a matter of the homework that each organizations do, and those organizations that do the best at that particular part of developing or predicting success are the ones that usually do the best in the long run. And it's very clear when you look at results, especially over the last 5 to 6 years.
Jim, just going back to the Sandy Alcantara discussion for a second, where do you think his most likely landing spot is?
You know, it's very interesting because you brought up the point earlier in this interview where you talked about him having a down year and how he's been inconsistent, although he has allowed 3 runs or less in 4 of his last 5 starts and has pitched much better over his last 5 starts. You know, that being said, I've kind of looked at it on the outside and I've said to myself, because he's having a down year, why would the Marlins trade him now? Why wouldn't you wait, let him have a strong August and September, and then trade him in the offseason? He's very affordable. You control him for 3 more years. And so to me, it makes a lot of sense to wait until the value's back. That's just my outside opinion. However, when I talked to over 40 executives in the industry over the last week, it's very clear that the industry believes he is the most likely pitcher to be traded at this year's deadline. So obviously there has to be a lot of GMs and presidents out there that believe what they're watching recently with Alcantara, that believe that he is going to get back that Cy Young form. It's really hard to get a number one starter. We all know what the cost is. All you have to do is go look at the $200 million-plus that the Yankees gave Max Fried or the Arizona Diamondbacks gave Corbin Burns. You know what that cost is. That's not the cost to get Alcantara for the next few years, which makes his trade value extremely high. So if teams, in fact, believe that he's healthy and believe that he's only going to keep getting better as he has shown in his last few starts, then I guess it makes sense. And so, you know, perhaps I normally guess on what the industry tells me because the GMs and the presidents are the ones making these deals, not those of us on the outside. And it's the GMs and the presidents that have done their homework on his medicals. They've done their homework on how he looks on a nightly basis. So, yeah, I think based on what they're telling me, I'm guessing he will be dealt. And it will be a haul, and it will be one of those moments.
So as we're talking to Jim Bowden, national writer for The Athletic, front office man for the Cincinnati Reds and Washington Nationals for over 15 years before turning the pen and the opinion to us, the media. I got to ask you, Jim, looking at what's available starting pitching wise or what you think will be available at the deadline, who are the top 3 or 4 starting pitching targets outside of Alcantara who's gotten so many headlines so far?
Yeah, so what's interesting about this is, as the GMs and presidents are telling me, we don't really know who's selling yet, and we're probably 3 weeks away from knowing that. That being said, it's very clear the Pirates are offering Mitch Keller and Andrew Haney. They're both on the board. Until Zach Eflin just went on the injured list with back discomfort, he was talked about. Most teams are looking at Zach Gallen and Merrill Kelly as two guys that are going to get moved once the Diamondbacks realize they need to sell. Right now, they want to buy and only 4 games out. Most GMs think that's going to change over the next 3 weeks. We've also heard the name of Edward Cabrera, Sandy Alcantara's teammate, quite a bit. He's 27 years old. He's controllable through 2028. Although he's arbitration eligible this offseason, which is something, as we all know, the Marlins don't love. He's made 13 starts this year. He's got an ERA under 4. Got 69 punchouts in 64 innings, and if control and command get better, he's got a higher upside, and so teams may be willing to pay a higher price for him, which puts him on this list and makes sense.
I also want to ask you, Jim, what do you think the Cubs should do?
I think the Cubs should keep adding pitching. Look, I predicted the Cubs in March would win this division. I stand by that. I think, obviously, the injury to Justin Steele was significant. I'm hoping Matthew Boyd can pitch this well the rest of the year. You don't know, though, when the innings start to add up. I would like to see them get another starter. I would like to see them get another reliever, and I believe they're going to do both. And I say that in strong confidence. They have a very strong farm system, and I'm being told by GMs in this industry that they are absolutely everywhere talking about everybody. So I strongly believe that Jed Hoyer and Carter Hawkins are going for it, and they will make a big move or two between now and July 31st.
We continue our conversation with Jim Bowden, who is the national writer for The Athletic, also the lead MLB analyst and insider for CBS Sports HQ here on Raheemy and Harris. Jim, looking at where the Cubs are right now and looking at the fact that there are so few sellers right now, do you think it's prohibitive for them to put everything on the table? I mean, you talked about the fact that they're going all out to try to win this year with Kyle Tucker in the fold. I don't know how much Kyle Tucker is going to cost, but it seems like the Cubs are at least interested if it doesn't get too excessive what he's asking for.
Well, it's going to get excessive. So if you don't want to do excessive, you're probably not going to get him. I've said this before. I'll stand by it. He's going to get a six in front of his number. He's going to get $600 million. Yeah. I mean, Guerrero got 500 and Tucker's a better player. Great defender, great arm, and they're just few and far between. When you're in your 20s like he is, he's going to age well. You can feel comfortable giving him a 10 or 12 year contract, and he's a complete player. There's nothing he can't do. You guys are witnessing it. I mean, he's an all-star player that hits for average, hits for power, steals bases, great defender, has a great arm. He does the full package. They're really hard to come by. And so, you know, if you're going to look at the price of Soto at 765 and Guerrero at 500, I think it's fair to place him at 600. Now the question is, who is the team that's going to step up and pay him that? I don't have the answer to that, but I do believe it's going to end up in that area. I don't know if the Cubs will play in that area. Time will tell.
No, I appreciate you saying that, Jim, because I remember you were quoted as saying that before the season even began. And we did wonder if that price had changed just because of what you're seeing in the market and what you're seeing out of teams. So I think even resetting that and saying you still think that's a number is valid information right now at this point.
Well, yeah, and I think it's always about supply and demand, right? I mean, the exceptions are those position players in their 20s that you project that are going to age well, and that they get paid. They just do. But the industry changed with Ohtani and Soto and Guerrero. The entire landscape changed. I mean, these players used to be $350 million, which would have been the normal rate, but that's not where we are anymore, and you can't sit there and deny it. This market will be limited. You know, that's the other part of this thing. There won't be a lot of teams playing at that number. There'll only be a handful, two or three teams. But just remember this. It only takes one. It only takes one team to make that kind of offer. And there's a clear fit in the big markets, right? There's a clear fit with the Philadelphia Phillies. Just a perfect fit to replace Nick Castellanos in right field. There's a clear fit with the New York Yankees. After losing out on Soto, they got a chance to get a better player for less money. So, you know, those are two big markets as an example, among others, that probably will be playing on there. So if you just take Yankees, Cubs, Phillies, that's enough for one of them to give them $600 million if that's his market.
And then, Jim, I know we've got to let you go, but really quickly, in honor of it being July 1st, what's the most player-friendly contract where you saw a guy keep getting paid that you've seen?
The player-friendly contract or club-friendly contract?
Player. Like where a guy just kept getting money since it's Bobby Bonilla Day.
Oh, I see what you did on that. Well, Juan Soto is the answer at $765 million. No one else can come close to that. He's the most overpaid player this game has ever seen and probably will be.
Oh, I knew we'd get a hot take in there somewhere.
I don't know that it's that hot.
I like it. I like the concept. Thank you so much, Jim, and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it, guys.